Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Policy Matters. I am Eric Allen, here with my co-host, Nicole Horn.
Hi, everyone. How is everyone? So much excitement going on right now.
How is everyone? That's the big question. The world is burning, and the Chaos Caucus is in full effect. But before we get into that, just a public service announcement. If you are listening and you live in the state of Georgia, municipal elections are November 7th. And early voting started on Monday. So if you live in a city or you're having an election where you are, make sure you look at your county website, find your locations, your times, and go out and vote early. But if anything else, make sure you have a plan to vote. You execute that plan before November 7th or on November 7th so your voice can be heard.
And I live in the city of Atlanta, and one of the big races happening here is for our Board of Education. And so, Eric, I told you this before we got started. I am going to shamelessly do one plug. We have a Board of Education at large seat. And I hope everyone who lives in Atlanta will get out and vote for Tamara Jones, who is running for that seat. She is an amazing elected official with deep knowledge of our schools, who's really passionate about returning more dollars to our schools. So that is my own personal public service announcement. All right.
There you go. We call that an endorsement, not a public service announcement.
That is an endorsement. It is, and I put my name behind it. Absolutely.
Well, there you go. And these races are very, very important. You know, we get caught up in the even year votes where it's either Congress or the presidential or the governor. But these odd year elections are very, very important for the things that matter most because they impact those things that are closest to home. So get out and vote. But whatever you do, don't vote for crazy. Good Lord, Nicole. Yeah. We are at a point, last time you listened to a podcast, talked to the listeners, we kind of set up and talked about the Chaos Caucus and they kicked Kevin McCarthy out of his seat. But here we are 16 days later, Nicole, and we still do not have a Speaker of the House. And from everything I can see, I'm not sure we're going to have one by the end of this week.
It's crazy. So Jim Jordan there was a vote for him and he lost by 20 plus votes. There was a vote again on his speakership and the list of defectors grew.
It did. The chaos started. So even if you take a step back out of the caucus vote last week, he received less votes than Steve Scalise, who realized that he wasn't going to be able to get the votes to win the speakership on the floor. So he did what most respectful people would do. He said, you know what? I don't want to take this to a floor for a fight. Not going to win. He knew he wasn't going to flip enough people. So he bowed out. Well, then there was another vote and Jim Jordan, who came in second, they're like, okay, next man up. It was like nobody really wanted him. He was set to lose 50 votes on the floor. By the time they came up yesterday for the first vote, Nicole, I think the count, they were saying, well, he may lose 5 votes, maybe 10 at the most. Let me tell you, in politics, the whip count is probably one of the most important things. I will tell you now, you do not want a Speaker of the House that can't count. The fact that his team thought that he was only going to lose 5 or possibly 10 votes and they lost 20 was a complete embarrassment to any momentum he had going forward. And as Nicole said, today was even worse. He actually picked up a net loss of 2 and did not get 22 Republican votes today.
Well, I don't know why people would choose him. This is a man who has never passed a piece of legislation. He has been called a political terrorist for his consistent actions of doing nothing other than just breaking down what other people are trying to build up. So, and on top of all of that, his role as the assistant coach for the wrestling team, I think it was Ohio State,
yes,
where he essentially ended up protecting a sexual predator, which is the wrestling team's doctor. So,
and you know, some of his personality is coming out. First of all, he's not made any friends. Yeah. He has spent his whole time in the house trying to burn the place down and has pretty much ticked off everybody. When you look at what the previous speaker did, I can't even think of his name now, McCarthy, you know, he helped people raise money. He helped recruit candidates. He, you know, he had a hard time and he actually had some political capital within the conference. Jim Jordan doesn't. He has been a firebrand. I mean, you mentioned a lot of things, but let me just tell you my take on it. Not only has he never passed a piece of legislation, I did a little bit of digging, and he's not even had a bill come up in committee. That tells you how unserious of a legislator he is. Not only that, he is the co-author and primary proponent of a national abortion ban. He has never voted in the affirmative for a single budget. So let me repeat that. This is someone who you want to elect as speaker 2 weeks before we, or a month before we go into a government shutdown. And he's never even voted yes for a single appropriations bill. And I think that's where you're seeing a lot of the appropriators just getting into the weeds. A lot of the no votes that he had were from the chair of the appropriations committee. She voted no against him and voted for someone else for speaker twice now because of she knows the unseriousness of Jim Jordan. Then I'm going to take it a step further and say, when the story came out about the wrestling situation, some of the wrestlers came out and said, you know, he bullied them into silence. That bullying mentality is the same persona that you see every day with Jim Jordan. Jacket off, shirt, you know, with just a tie on, yelling at people, screaming. He's doing that same thing behind closed doors. And I think what it's resulting in, Nicole, is less people wanting to vote for him.
Yeah.
And we saw that today.
Well, the backup plan that is now being floated is fascinating to me. So currently, Representative Patrick McHenry is the interim speaker. And what they're proposing, what a group of Democrats and Republicans, kind of center-leaning group, is proposing is expanding his role of interim so that they can actually get some work done and giving that a sunset date of January 3rd. So I think is fascinating and needed because we need to fund Ukraine. We need to fund Israel. And guess what, guys? We need to fund our government. That's coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And I'm not as optimistic. I don't know. I think that's what needs to happen. There needs to be some coalition government. And I think most mature democracies around the world have understood that sometimes a coalition government is the only path. Here in America, we're entrenched in our partisanship. Just think, Nicole, Republicans right now are blaming Democrats for Speaker McCarthy being relieved of his duty. I just find that to be ridiculous. You know, every talking point they have is that, 208 Democrats teamed with 8 Republicans. No, you're the majority. If you wanted that speaker, you could have gotten the majority vote and you could have put the speaker in. If the shoe were on the other foot, I can guarantee you not a single Republican would have voted to save Nancy Pelosi. That conversation is just disingenuous. And you know what? I'll tell you what, if you think Democrats are that powerful and they're in they're in control, why don't 8 of you side with them and elect Hakeem Jeffries? Because for 17 elections now, he has been the top vote getter for speaker.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is
so
not going to happen.
We've got a long way to go. I also am pessimistic about the McHenry solution, because at the end of the day, enough Republicans would have to be a yes vote on a vote where Democrats will be a majority of the yeses. And I don't think that's something they can take back to their constituency. They've been feeding their constituency this hostile, angry BS for so many years now, since the Tea Party in 2010. that they can't go back to their district. They'll all be primary. They can't go back to their districts and say, I voted yes on a speaker that was elected by the majority of the Democrats. And I think when the rubber hits the road, unless they can come to a consensus as a caucus where they are the majority of the vote and they only lose two or three people.
Yeah.
Until that happens, Nicole, I just don't see a path forward in a party that has got its base so lathered up in demonizing Democrats. They can't work with Democrats.
You're right. You're right. But it makes me sad that we can't make it happen, because I do feel like we need to put the best interest of the country up front. So
when has the Republican
moderate,
Party
reasonable Republican? Let's get him elected House Speaker and let's start doing the work of the people.
The problem, Nicole, is a reasonable Republican is repulsed by the base of the Republican Party. That's the problem. You cannot find a moderate Republican that'll get 218 votes.
Yeah.
You can't find anyone because they are reaping what they have sowed for so long. And when you say do it for the good of the country, I would argue the Republican Party's not done much for the good of the country as a body in years. I'm not putting everybody in the same bucket. There are good Republicans in the legislature, but it's not enough of them to have a voice. And so, you know, Jim Jordan, one of the members who wanted him to, who said, I will vote for you if you come out publicly and say Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. And that is one reason why he's not getting some of the votes, is because he would not come out. The other thing, and now we're going to get off of this soon, but I can bash Jim Jordan all day long. But the other problem, let's think about this. How can you have someone that is the Speaker of the House who over the last 4 years did everything they could to ignore a valid subpoena by the January 6th committee, who was an architect of the January 6th events, and who led the fight on the floor to disenfranchise millions of votes in seven different states?
Yeah.
That is not leadership, people. Never passed a bill, never had a bill in committee, was never held accountable for his involvement with the wrestlers at Ohio State. You can go on and on and on. I think Republicans have a lot of work to do. I pray that they get it done, but it's up to them. They need to stop blaming Democrats for their chaos. If you want a speaker, you've got the majority. Elect a speaker.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff that's going on, not to mention a potential shutdown in November. And this is a quasi shutdown. I mean, if you think about it, Jim Jordan's getting his wish. He's always wanted to shut down the government. Well, now we're at a standstill. We're at a shutdown. Nothing's getting done. And as you said, you know, there are a lot of issues with Ukraine, with Israel that need to be addressed. And so let's pivot. We'll probably come back to this a little bit, but I think we need to pivot just for a few seconds and talk about what's going on in the Middle East, because it's on fire.
Heartbreaking.
And, you know, it all started on the 8th, or was it the 7th, October 7th, with that, you know, vicious terrorist attack. And just as we did after 9/11, Israel has every right to defend itself and ensure that this type of attack never happens again.
And just the stories you're hearing about the level of
brutality.
Brutality. That's the right word, Eric. Brutality that Hamas visited upon Israel is just, it's just devastating. And I am so proud that Biden is headed to Israel to see if he can help, you know, help manage things and hopefully pave the way to some humanitarian aid. Yesterday, there was that, for those who are listening in the days coming, a hospital in Gaza was bombed. And initially, Israel was blamed, but it's becoming more and more clear that it wasn't Israel that bombed that hospital, but it was, again, terrorist attacks that bombed that hospital. You were saying
it was a misfired rocket. you know, yeah. that landed on, you know, or near a hospital and caused a lot of death and a lot of damage. But to be fair to the entire situation, just as heartbreaking and equally as heartbreaking are all of the civilian casualties on both sides, even in Gaza.
Yes.
That yes. are piling up. And I think the president is being a leader. I can only imagine this happening during the Trump years. You would not want a Donald Trump going into that environment.
God, no.
That would be a very unpredictable and likely calamitous activity. But President Biden has a tremendous amount of foreign policy experience. And I think he is the right person at the right time to go in and get things done. As you said, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty, and I give him credit for going in the face of uncertainty, because most presidents don't do anything unless it is crystal clear what the outcomes are going to be. But he's pushing forward. Today they even announced that, the humanitarian aid, Israel is allowing now the humanitarian aid into Gaza. Which is a huge benefit. I mean, the American Red Cross, not the American Red Cross, the Red Cross and other organizations have been literally begging to be able to provide the much needed humanitarian support in Gaza. And due to the leadership of President Biden, today trucks are flowing into Gaza to provide that humanitarian relief.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's that's leadership. So, you know, I was telling, you know, earlier today I was having a conversation with one of my, I'll say it the nice way, one of my friends from the other side of the aisle. And they were, even they had to acknowledge that in this moment, Joe Biden is the leader that's needed. If anyone could go and try, at least try.
Yeah. It would certainly not be Trump.
It wouldn't. And it would, I could name a lot of Democrats that ran for president that it shouldn't be. This is a very unique situation. And I believe, as the Bible says, is for such a time as this, Joe Biden is in the right place at the right time with the right skills and tools, to try. And that was one of the things that I tried to instill in this colleague was, you know what? Let's not talk about what he didn't get done. Sometimes it's just the effort. Mm-hmm. And we don't know yet what's going to get done, what's not going to get done. But I can tell you now, there are residents in Gaza who may not even know that it was because of the president getting those trucks to flow in with water and medical supplies and everything else, but they are happy that they're there. And that is leadership. And that's the leadership that I believe is on display for the entire world that will put America back on sound footing on the global stage.
I can't add anything to that. I think you're right on target, Eric.
Yeah. So it's so we'll keep watching. It's a very fluid situation. I mean, things will change by the time we get through recording, and we'll see what's going on. But you know, I for one appreciate the president and appreciate what he's doing to get through.
And we as Democrats, I think this is our opportunity to lift him up even more and to be actively pointing out that this is the leader we need right now. When absolutely. You start talking about his age, step back, because this is the man who has taken the bull by the horns.
Well, once again, the juxtaposition, let's put both on a split screen. On the left side, you've got a president going into the first time visiting the Middle East, a United States president visiting the Middle East in the middle of a conflict, trying his best to make sure. And don't be mistaken. If you hear his speeches, he has been very clear to Israel that the humanitarian crisis that they're creating needs to stop.
Yeah.
And he is on the stage showing that leadership, telling the rest of the Arab world, stand back. You don't want to get involved in this. That is the leadership going on the left side. On the right side of the screen, well, we've got another speaker that's in the second round of losing their bid for the speakership. We have one half of one third of our government paralyzed. They can't even decide who they would want to lead them. We're spiraling toward another government shutdown. It's just chaos. It's the chaos caucus.
Well, I think, but there are these two big issues happening now, and this is going to be a short podcast for us today.
Yeah.
But the likelihood is we won't go a full 2 or 3 weeks without reconvening, because things are going to be happening, and we'll jump right back on. And
I would expect you to be back next week. That's my thought. We'll be back next week. But before we leave, just for those in Georgia, in Cobb County in particular, something that I've been following for years, just wanted to give an update. The Sterigenics case was going to go to court next week. They settled. Now, let me preface this by saying, and I've said it to a couple of media outlets today, and I'll say it here. I have heard some horrible stories from families impacted by this plant.
Give context.
Yeah, so Sterigenics is the ethylene oxide plant right on the Fulton County, Cobb County border. It's in the city of Atlanta. Well, it's technically an Atlanta address, but it's in Cobb County, one of those things. But it's right there on the river. It sterilizes medical devices and has been on again, off again operation for the last 4 or 5 years after some things came to light that ethylene oxide is a carcinogen, causes cancer. So the community was in an uproar. There were a couple of dozen plaintiffs that were looking to civilly hold Sterigenics accountable for illnesses and deaths. And as I was saying, I've talked to a lot of those families. I've attended a funeral of someone who was impacted by that plant. And I fully believe unequivocally no amount of money will heal the hurt that these families have been through. I also think this is a negative because I was hopeful that a jury or a judge would actually rule and come down on the side. That's the one thing we're missing, is they won't let it go to court. And I can tell you that you can tell they're culpable. I'll use that word. I feel they're culpable because they have spent almost $200 million in the last year in Georgia and Illinois settling with families because they don't want to go to court and have a judge utter those words of libel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very tenuous situation. We're going to continue to follow it the same way we're going to continue to follow this map situation on the federal side with congressional and state ledge maps. Judge Jones has said that he'll rule by November, by Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And he sent a letter to Merrick Garland asking for an opinion of whether or not Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is illegal or constitutional, which I think he knows the answer to that, and he just wants it on the record for the appeal. So it'll help things move pretty quick. So we're going to continue to follow that. We've also got a couple of county commission and school board maps being challenged. There's a lot going on. We call this the off season of the legislature, but it's still a lot of work. A lot of things being done, and we're going to be following it on Policy Matters to make sure we keep you up to date on everything going on around the country, around the world, and right here in Georgia.
Woo-hoo!
So we'll talk to you next time on Policy Matters. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.